John 4, 7 to 21. Beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. God's love was revealed among us in this way. God sent his only Son into the world so that we might live through him. In this is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the atoning sacrifice for our sins. Beloved, since God loved us so much, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God. If we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is perfected in us. By this, we know that we abide in him and he in us, because he has given us of his Spirit. And we have seen and do testify that the Father has sent his Son as the Savior of the world. God abides in those who confess that Jesus is the Son of God, and they abide in him. So we have known and believe the love that God has for us. God is love, and those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them. Love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness on the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, for fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not reached perfection in love. We love because he first loved us. Those who say, I love God, and hate their brothers or sisters are liars. For those who do not love a brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. The commandment that we have from him is this: those who love God must love their brothers and sisters also. I will also be reading from Matthew 22, 34 to 40. When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest? He said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the laws and the prophets. And God always blesses the public reading of his inspired and infallible word.
We are as prone to love as the sun is to shine. So wrote the 17th century poet, pastor, and theologian Thomas Traherne. We were made for love, to love and to be loved. It is a driving force for most people, because what we love holds our hearts and it shapes us. It demands our attention. What you love will keep you awake at night. It will inspire you. It will draw you. It will transform you. That is why, over the next couple of months, I want us to take in our Sunday morning services a look at both devotion and determination. Devotion is the expression or the practice that flows out of love. And many believers, many followers of Jesus Christ, become driven rather than drawn. They are shaped by duty and obligation rather than by devotion and intimacy. God never meant it to be that way. When you take love of God and love from God out of our equation, we end up becoming very religious. Now, don't misunderstand me. There are moments in a human being's life where they may love something but have to do something out of habit or out of duty or out of discipline. But when that's the only reason that you do something, you are in trouble. When you are entirely drawn by duty or obligation, you have fallen into a legalistic or a traditionalist expression of your devotion or your life for God, and it will not last. Slowly, breath by breath, service by service, gathering by gathering, month by month, and year by year, joy leaves your salvation journey. And it becomes shallow, hollow, less. God, however, calls us to a life that is shaped by devotion. First to Him, and then to one another. So over the next few months, we are going to look at loving the God who loves us this morning. Then we're going to ask the question, how healthy is your heart? Then we're going to be reminded that devotion knows no limits. Then we're going to look at the power of devotion in shaping our determination. And then we will reflect on how determination and devotion shapes our priorities and our decisions. In the penultimate part of the series, we will look at this simple idea, devotion and the power of delight. The transforming power of devotion at the center of our heart lifts us and enables us to make decisions that otherwise we could not make, and to do things that otherwise we could not do. And lastly, on the 2nd of November, deliberately intended as the day that if all of our governance structures are approved and all of our processes are followed, then on the 2nd of November together we will be commissioning our new senior leadership team. And that team will be commissioned on the last Sunday of our theme of devotion and determination. And the title, Christ be magnified. In all that we are and in all that we do, may Christ be magnified. I would encourage you to come, to attend the gatherings, to sit with us as we open God's word together. Devotion is determined or defined in the Collins Dictionary with three different lines. Number one, strong attachment or affection marked by dedicated loyalty. Number two, religious zeal or piety. And number three, religious prayers or observance. Loving God and being loved by God looks like something, because love always looks like something. That's why in our readings, in both the words of Jesus and the words of John, reflecting on the words of Jesus, you hear the same thing. When you love God, you love each other. When you love God, you love your neighbor, because in loving one's neighbor, one is loving God. One is seeing in the person in front of you the form, the character, and the call to love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. Loving God transforms us. I can't begin to explain to you what it feels like to sit with Him. Just to sit with Him. And to allow His grace and His mercy to flood your soul. If you've done it, then you know what I'm talking about. If you've not done it, then all the words that I could give you in the world will never explain it. Because the psalmist says this, taste and see that the Lord is good. It is one of the greatest delights, one of the greatest privileges, and one of the greatest joys of my heart to be able to sit with Jesus Christ, to know that I am known, to understand that I am loved and accepted, It is the most transforming power that I could ever begin to explain to you. If there's anything that sits at the heart of Malcolm Duncan, it is that there is nothing that I need to do to make God love me anymore. And there is nothing that I could ever do that would make him love me any less. Because I am loved completely and fully as I am. I will never be able to disillusion God, because he had no illusions about me in the first place. To come into that place is to come into a place of freedom. It's to come into the place of hope, because love finds us. I remember when I was in primary three. Now, primary three is seven, so I don't know what year that is now. Is that like year two or something, or year three? Year three. Thank you so much. We had a teacher called Mrs. McMaster. Long before I became a Christian, I went to a school that had lots of porta cabins. Every one of them had a leak, and every one of them had a bucket to catch the leak. I went to school in the days where you still got a third of a pint of milk free before Margaret Thatcher, the milk snatcher, took it away in 1975. But I remember going to that primary school, then to P3, as we called it, or year three, as you call it now. And in the first few months, I was only reminded of this week, in the first few months of that class, Mrs. McMaster said to us all, boys and girls, I came from a council estate in Belfast, I'm going to teach you something that I want you to remember for the rest of your life. And here's what she taught us. I didn't know it was the Bible. Even if I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am nothing. And she taught us 1 Corinthians 13. I remember it because the person that learned it, word perfect, got to give out the milk for a month. And I learned it word perfect. So I got to give out the milk for a month. I was 7 years of age. And as I turned to prepare for this series just a few weeks ago and began to think about how I wanted it to flow and what I wanted each topic to be, I was reminded of that. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not puffed up. Love does not seek its own way. Love believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. I wonder, as you listen to the words of 1 John 4, how they impact you. For me, they remind me of many things, but here's the first. Love found me. I didn't find love. Here is love, John says. Not that we loved him, but that he loved us. In 1 John 4, from verses 7 to 12, we read, beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. How do we know this love? In the creation, of course. In the church, of course. In reading, of course. In music, of course. In poetry, of course. In dance, of course. But above and beyond all of those, the Bible makes it clearer than day. God's love was revealed amongst us in this way. God sent his Son, his only Son, into the world so that we might live through him. Love found you. Love died for you. Love hung on a cross for you. Love suffered for you. Love went through rejection for you. Love endured pain for you and for me. Love found us. So as we look at devotion, shaping determination, let me remind you that this is not about you finding God. This is about the God who has found you, who comes and confronts us with our sin and with our shame and offers us hope, accepts us and transforms us, and then takes the audacious step of saying, now you love the world just as I have loved you. Now you show others the love and the mercy that I have shown you. To be devoted to God is to be devoted to one another. To be in love with Him is to be loving toward one another. To be caught up with God's grace and mercy is to be shaped and changed by Him. In verse 16 of 1 John 4, we read, God is love, and those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them. Just a chapter before, in 1 John 3, 18, John has said this to those that he is writing to. He's an old man, by the way, by the time these letters are written. Tradition tells us that John was carried into Ephesus on what we would call a chaise longue. He had lost the ability to walk because he was older. And it was said that wherever he went, the first question that he would be asked was, tell us about Jesus. That's why his letter begins, that which we have seen, that which we have handled, and that which we have touched, we proclaim to you concerning the word of life. And in 1 John 3, 18, he says, let us love not just in word, but in deed and in action. Honestly, sisters and brothers, who would you rather spend time listening to? Somebody with a lot of knowledge or somebody with a lot of love? We can fill our heads with words. We can explain the Greek and the Hebrew. We can have as many letters after our name as we like and as many titles before it as we can muster. But when you meet somebody who loves God, when you come into interaction with somebody who knows what it is to sit with their Savior, you know the difference. It transforms you. The desire of love is the deep desire of the Spirit that only God can satisfy. In one of his sermons, the Irish theologian and biblical scholar F.J.A. Hort of the 19th century said that at the heart of every human being there are two deep thirsts or two deep yearnings. The desire for light and the desire for love. The desire for light pushes us to look for truth, to look for meaning, to look for hope. He suggests that the desire for love is deeper still, and that we find it, listen carefully to what I'm about to say, satisfied, but only partially, in relationships and in family. The deeper we love them, the harder it is when we lose them. Listen to a sermon that he preached in the 19th century, a part of it anyway. The more tenderly we love them, the more we shall feel that they cannot exhaust our love, that there is something within us which longs after the one who cannot change. Like poor, weak mortals, the one whose love is as deep and as constant as the everlasting heavens. The one from whose presence death itself will never cut us off. Our love is therefore never fulfilled until it lays hold of God Himself and is renewed from that never-failing source. That's why when we lose somebody, we feel the pain of it. And we know that we need a connection with something or someone that we will never lose. And the only one, and I tell you out of lived experience, the only one you will never lose is God. And when you have Him at the center of your life, you can deal with everything and anything else. I had to learn that the hard way. I hope you don't. I had to be confronted with the reality that I had put people that I love at the center of my life and I had given them a more important place than God himself. People like, and she won't mind me saying this to you, my wife, my children, my grandchildren. I had allowed myself to love them more than I loved God. And the truth is that if you had asked me 6 or 7 years ago, 30 years into ministry, who will you choose, your family or God, I would have given you the right answer in public. But in my heart, I know I would have chosen my children over God. I would have chosen my wife over God because I'd allowed them to be the center of my life. When you choose God over them, you love them more deeply. Your love is released, it is deepened, and it is strengthened. It's not like you demote them. God promotes them in your heart and in your soul because you are liberated to love at a deeper level than you would if you put them first. If you don't know that, then I pray that you don't have to learn it the hard way. To love God above all things is what gives us the power to love other people properly. It's why ministry is never first place. It's why titles are never first place. But when you are driven by determination and obligation and duty, that becomes the wrong way around. William Temple, who was the Archbishop of York and then the Archbishop of Canterbury for a couple of years in the Second World War, said this: love of God is the root. Love of our neighbor is the fruit of the tree of life. Neither can exist without the other, but one is cause and the other is effect. Do you want to love your neighbor? Do you want to love your kids? Do you want to love your parents? Do you want to love your spouse? Do you want to love your neighbor? Do you want to love your community? Do you want to love your colleagues? Then love God. Because when your root is in his love, it gives you the capacity to love others. Does that make sense? Do you look around and find yourself asking the question, how do these people worship? I looked here. I was quite overcome with emotion this morning, listening to you worshiping and joining you. I wasn't singing so much. I was just enjoying listening and being part of it. Because you can hear in your voice your love for God. You can hear when a musician hits a key, and I don't know how to explain it, but you can tell the difference between a musician who's simply playing and a musician who's worshiping. They're hitting the same key. It's turned off. Still turned off. It's not coming. You can tell the difference between a person who is playing and a person who is worshiping. You can tell the difference between a person who is singing and a person who is worshiping. You can tell the difference between a person who is speaking and a person who is preaching. You can tell the difference between a person who is lecturing and a person who is sharing out of deep, profound personal experience. Do you love him? Are you willing to lay your life down for him? Will you give everything in order to put him first? That brings me to my second reading. I'm not going to do it now, Esteban. Don't worry. After all that hard work. All right, then, just for you. Oh, it's still off, Esteban. Are you ready? Go. Hey. Listen. You didn't know that I could play the piano, did you? That's about as far as it goes. Just thank God that you don't have me leading you in worship. That's the second reading, Matthew 22. What are you about, Jesus? What's the center of the human condition? What are we called to do or to be? What does it mean to be human? That's the question the Pharisees and the scribes are asking Jesus. What does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to exist as a human being? It is, the posh word is ontologically. It is foundationally the most important question the philosophers ask. And Jesus answers it. Here's what it means to be human. Here's what it means to be alive. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. Those words are notoriously difficult to translate from Hebrew into English. There aren't four of them in Hebrew. There's only three. But it boils down to this. Love him with every fiber of your being, with every part of who you are, with everything that he has given you. There are echoes of the words from Deuteronomy 6. And they remind us that at the heart of Jewish faith and at the heart of Christian faith is the call not to come to church, not to do services, not to write governance documents, not to have long, lengthy conversations about budgets and how we're going to make everything work. They all matter. But above and beyond them all, love him. And let his love find you. And let his love change you. Because love not only finds us, love liberates us. Jean-Pierre Camus was a 16th century writer. And he had a conversation with a very famous educationalist called François de Sales, who was at the time the Bishop of Geneva. And they were discussing the question of loving God. And Camus wanted to understand how to love God, what it meant, how to progress in it, how to grow in it. Good question. And here's what de Sales said back. I love this. Listen. There are many others who would also like me to tell them of techniques and methods and secret ways of attaining perfection. Yet I can only tell them that the sole secret is a hearty love of God. And the only method of acquiring that love is by loving. You learn to speak by speaking, to study by studying, to run by running, to work by working. All those who wish to learn in any other way only deceive themselves. If you really want to love God, go on and love him more and more. Never look back. Move forward constantly. Begin as a humble apprentice, and the very power of love will draw you on to become a master in the art. Those who have made most progress will constantly press ahead, never for a moment thinking that they have reached the goal. For charity should continue to increase in us until we draw our last breath. Did you get the last line? By charity, he means love. Love should increase in us until our last breath. You haven't got there yet. I haven't got there yet. What if your prayer tomorrow morning, what if your prayer for the rest of your life, the first thing you pray when you get up in the morning is, Lord, help me to love you more deeply today. Help me to see you in others more deeply today. How would that change us? Love finds us, but love liberates us. Karl Rahner, a 20th century theologian, wrote this, only in love can I find you, my God. Listen to these words. In love, the gates of my soul spring open, allowing me to breathe a new air of freedom and forget my petty self. In love, my whole being streams forth out of the rigid confines of narrowness and anxious self-assertion, which make me a prisoner of my own poverty and emptiness. In love, all the powers of my soul flow out toward you, wanting never to return but to lose themselves completely in you, since by your love, you are the innermost power of my heart, closer to me than I am to myself. But when I love you, when I manage to break out of the narrow cycle of self and leave behind the restless agony of unanswered questions, then I can bury myself entirely in you, O mysterious God. And with myself, all my questions. That is freedom. And what is the pinnacle of this call, this journey that we will make over the next 6 weeks as the musicians return? It isn't to love an idea. It isn't to love a philosophical statement. It is to love Jesus. Because in him, the fullness of the Godhead dwells in bodily form. And we are complete in him.